Attention, everyone. Wayfair's Black Friday preview sale is here early. Right now, get up to 70% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Guest-approved bedding for a season of hosting, top brands and cookware, festive holiday decor for indoors and out, and so much more. Whether you need a new sofa that fits the whole family or a new serving dish that fits your famous sweet potato casserole, Wayfair is the place to go for Black Friday deals on finds to feast. Get festive and get comfortable all season long. Plus, sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home, even the big stuff. And the best part, speedy delivery in time for the holidays. There's no place like home for the holidays, and no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. Shop early Black Friday deals right now and save up to 70% off, only at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
88% of the workweek is spent communicating, so it's important your team does it well. Enter Grammarly. Grammarly's AI helps teams communicate clearly the first time. It shows you how to make words resonate with your audience, helps with brainstorming, and lets you instantly create and revise drafts in just one click. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who use Grammarly to move work forward. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly, enterprise ready AI.
Welcome to the Picture Book Look podcast. I'm Kim Chafee.
And I'm Kirsty Call. Together, we'll share some of our favorite picture books and chat with their creators to explore the journey from story idea to bookshelf.
We'd love you to join us as we take a picture book look.
Hey, Kirsty.
Hey, Kim.
So I have a tongue twister for you today. Are you ready? It's a classic.
Okay.
Yep.
Sure.
Are you ready? Okay. She sells seashells by the seashore. Go.
Wait, how many times do you want me to say it?
Well, it's really hard for me to say, so I'll be impressed if you can say it once.
Okay, I'm going to try to say it, and then I'm going to try to say it faster and faster. That's what I used to do as a kid with this tongue twister.
Okay.
But it's been many, many years, so I don't even know if I can say it at all. Okay.
Okay.
She sells seashells by the seashore. 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 She sells seashells by the seashore.
Okay, that's impressive. That is impressive. I can't say it without actually like looking at the words and just reading them carefully. So I'm very impressed. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You passed. So, well, now that our tongues are like officially tied, let's intro today's book and guests. Our book is She Sells Seashells. Mary Anning, an Unlikely Paleontologist, written by Heidi E.Y. Stemple and illustrated by Emily Pyack.
This book shines light on an incredible woman who was a paleontologist without any education, mainly because she was a woman. She wasn't allowed to go to school. Mary Anning is remarkable, and so is the telling of her story in this engaging and informative nonfiction picture book.
We're happy to have Heidi and her editor, Julie Bliven, to chat about the book's journey. Let's talk. Heidi, we're going to start with you. Where did you get the idea for this story?
I've actually been obsessed with Mary Anning since, I think I just looked it up. It was 2004 or 2005. I wrote an article for, it wasn't Cricket Magazine, but it was one of the, maybe Spider Magazine, with my mom. We wrote an article and then there was a poem. And I thought, I need to know more about this character. And I've always sort of read anything I could find about her. And I found some adult books that I was reading and I was absolutely obsessed. And I started writing a draft and SCBWI New England happened. This was back before the pandemic, a couple years before the pandemic.
Okay.
And Julie and I always presented together. I met Julie, can I say, when she was an assistant to the editor. I think probably an assistant editor, but I'm not sure I knew what that meant, the distinction. And she and I wanted to do a book together. And I said, hey, I really want to write about Mary Anning. And she said, I want you to do that. And I want you to send it to me. And
amazing.
We went back and forth for years about it until early in the pandemic, I guess, when you finally bought it. So I have just been absolutely dinosaur and fossil crazy as a kid with my brothers. The Massachusetts State Fossil is a dinosaur footprint. I always thought that was really cool. And
I did not know that.
I know. But once I found out that she sells seashells, the tongue twister, which, by the way, I've been having a blast doing with kids that I'm reading to.
I bet.
And I can get all the first three lines, but the fourth line still flummoxes me. Once I found out that that, though probably written before Mary Anning's time, once it was written down and became part of the just traditional culture that everybody knows this tongue twister, it had been morphed to be about Mary Anning, which I always thought was so cool.
That is so.
So if you can't do the title, I dare you to try and do the rest of it.
No, I can't do it. I just can't.
Wait till you hear our intro to this book. So, yeah. Julie, now that we have a little more background on how you came to see this manuscript, what were your thoughts through the iterations? It sounds like it was kind of a years long process. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think that it was just, I have known Heidi for a long time, really respected her work and her passion for nonfiction. And I think it was just a matter of time for her to just find the right voice. You know, I knew that the subject matter could be perpetually interesting and fascinating. It was just a matter of which angle she's going to take and how her narrative voice was going to feel like she was hitting her stride and like amplifying, you know, the voice that I've seen Heidi use in other texts and but also feel fresh and different from other things she's used in other books. And to me, I think it's some of the best writing you have to date, Heidi, because I feel like it's just so deliberate. And, you know, I have to admit that when we were going back and forth about it, I would question, you know, is there room for another book about Mary Anning, especially on the heels of Dinosaur Lady, which was released around 2020, like as we were signing or as we were talking about this book. And I think what really sold me is when Heidi hit that sort of overt feminist lens in her voice, where it was really positioning the otherness of Mary Anning during the time against the sort of male scientists of that time period and using that as a guiding post for her narrative voice. And we see it even unlikely. In the subtitle, Mary Anning, an unlikely paleontologist, you know, like
right.
Once she sort of hit that stride, it all came together and it felt like, oh yes, this is relevant to today while illuminating the past. And, it just kind of all came together and it was, you know, I think what was really exceptional then is seeing Emily's artwork take on Heidi's voice, right? Where we would see lighting or perspective in the artwork that was othering Mary and sort of demonstrating how these male scientists didn't recognize her or include her in their discussions or give her credit for her paleontological. I don't know. If
I think it did.
That didn't come out right. discoveries. Okay, we'll say it did. Those discoveries and did not give her credit. And so we're seeing that beautiful ballet between Heidi's voice and the artwork happening. You know, there's a couple spreads where there's one spread in particular where, you know, Mary's sort of walking off into the distance in the shadows. And then these men are looking over one of her greatest finds in their lab or wherever they are. And it's really illuminating again, that voice of no one asking what Mary thought. Women of that time could not be part of the discussion. We're not part of, you know, paleontology wasn't even there yet. So,
well, even the cover, all these men are in the shadows and she's in color, right? And they are back there taking mm-hmm. you know, credit for all the things that she did.
And Glass.
I love this angle.
Mm-hmm. And she's unabashedly looking directly at the camera while mm-hmm. the men are in shadow facing in the other direction. I absolutely, when I saw that cover, are you kidding? But so for me, the feminist angle was super important. And I also want to give Julie credit. When I sent her the manuscript, it was very short. It was almost, it was very, very slight. And you would not believe that I had an editor who said more.
I do want to know, like, the iterations. It sounds like you sent her several versions of this. What was that writing process like?
So even before, because we were so wanting to do a book together, even before we had a contract, she and I just wanted to talk it through. And I had sent her a very, very slight, not rhyming, but lyrical manuscript. And she said, I just am not getting enough info. Like, this information is way too interesting. So mm-hmm. we went back and forth on that. And the feminist angle came in, like she said, pretty early, but then finding exactly how I wanted to tell it, because the men were not, and I state this right in the back matter, that the men in this story were not the bad guys. It is all in context of history. So mm-hmm. this, I believe that the child reader of this book is really going to understand that. And one of the things that I did sort of for fun, but then it became part of my writing, was none of the men or boys in this story have a name, because Mary really didn't yes. have a name when it was happening. I know one reviewer was very angry about that, but everybody else seems to like it. So it's her brother, her father, the rich men, the educated men. Mm-hmm. And in fact, one of the men sold all of his fossils to help her family when they were really desperately poor. So they were men doing very kind things. They actually did respect her one-on-one because they knew that the fossils were coming from her. But she and all women, even after she died, were not allowed in the Geological Society. And the Geological Society of London is was the entity that was really creating paleontology at the time. And I just always thought that was absolutely crazy. How is this possible? But of course, hopefully kids reading it today do not have those constraints. And that for them to be able to see, and not just girls, but all kids, to be able to see what we fought for and how it was important that everybody really was working together. But Mary was out there getting her skirts dirty in the
yeah,
water.
Yeah, true. And dangerous it's work. Written so beautifully.
I love
so
that.
Engaging and informative. And I love that angle, that feminist angle, and how she had a passion. And also she was making money for her family to eat. That is why she's digging up these fossils.
Right.
Like,
one
this
fossil
was her
time, meal at a
this
time.
Was why her family was alive. And I think that's such a beautiful, well, the whole story is just so well done.
It's brilliant. It's really brilliant. The whole unlikely paleontologist, the word unlikely, I think is, you know, we talk about word choice so much, and that is the perfect word because it captures so much. There are so many different angles to that where she, you know, didn't say, oh, I want to be a scientist one day, right? Which is like a storyline we've heard from, you know, some people. That wasn't Mary's story. But I want to ask you, Heidi, about the refrain that pops up about, but Mary didn't worry much. And I'm wondering, was that in the story from the beginning or was that through revision?
I love that line. I think that came through revision, and it really just, I wanted to make sure that because this story goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, I wanted to make sure there's two refrains, actually. I wanted to make sure that it always returned to center Mary, because mm-hmm. we went to the museums and to the schools with the boys and then the men and then the Geological Society. But I always wanted to bring it right back to Mary, making sure that she was always centered in the story. And sort of every time the story goes off and starts pontificating about new discoveries and scientific heroes and collectors and revelations, I grabbed that, you know, sort of, we started floating off into academia, right? And I kept grabbing it back and grounding it back into the earth, quite literally with the words chip, scrape, chip. So as soon as it got too lofty, we brought it right back to Mary.
Yeah.
She didn't have time. She didn't have time to worry about that. She was working. And then we brought it back to the earth because everything was coming out of the earth. And that chip, scrape, chip actually was where this book started. That was the one thing I think that remained from the first draft all the way to the end. And interestingly too, I think you're talking about a pretty high level subject. But when you have those refrains in a text, even if it's a little bit more of a complicated text, and it has some big words in it.
It does.
I can read it to the youngest children because that's the part they understand. They're really looking at it keeps going back into something that is very tangible and very accessible to even younger children. So I'm reading it to toddlers and a little bit older too. And even though they're not getting all the nuances, they're enjoying the story as well. Mm-hmm. And what's going on.
I love that so much. So Julie, can you give us a look into more of the editing process? We talked a little bit about it. What else?
Yeah, I think that for a lot of it was about structure and where there's room for any sort of repetition or refrain to reinforce themes or character. And so I think that's where a lot of the that's where I would encourage Heidi to think about. I would just sort of highlight language that was already doing that and then encourage her to figure out a way to use it consistently throughout and to think about moving, you know, one to three spreads at a time and what was she achieving in those spreads and how could we move through Mary digging to sort of highlighting that she was just a girl and at that time she could collect and find pretty or peculiar things, but rarely did she get to study them or certainly girls from poor families didn't become scientists. So how do we move through the action of her discovery to the context of the time period to her, you know, the story gradually moving us toward the change and the shift. So I think I was just really encouraging Heidi to always be thinking about the pagination, the gradual shift, and then to use the language that, you know, that feminist lens and the chip, scrape, chip and the, you know, but Mary didn't worry much about those rich boys or those scientists. You know, she just kept climbing those cliffs and, you know, dodging those falling rocks and searching for those fossils. So shaping the story with the refrain and again, that intentional shift toward how those discoveries changed things and changed, you know, the world in terms of the creation of paleontology and the inclusion of women and that move toward that final spread where Heidi got to really celebrate not only Mary, but just this idea of, let me just open to that page, this idea of, one fossil at a time, one discovery at a time. Mary changed the scientific world forever. And unlikely and paleontologists forged a path for every girl, for everyone curious enough to keep digging. So kind of ended on this universal note.
Such a beautiful last line.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a word that comes to mind, like when reading this book, and then even more so having had this conversation about the creation of the book, is smart. I feel like there were so many smart choices and like deliberate choices that just make the book like so much better. Like it could have been a great book, period. But the things you've said about, you know, bringing it back to the earth, just makes it feel like there's so much thought that goes into a picture book. And this is just proof of how amazing the book can really be when so much thought is put into it.
I have a couple editorial stories. Julie at one point said, I better go check. I said that because I said, I'm going to use this in a speech for sure. This working on this book was, I mean, nonfiction is always a little bit more intense on the editing process for very obvious reasons. But Julie and my process, because we were really going in on each spread and making sure everything was perfect, we did a lot of phone calls. And there's one page. Yeah, we did a lot of phone calls, and it was a lot of her sort of nudging me and me explaining my thoughts, and then us sort of meeting in the middle for in the right place for the book. Because often, you know, one person has one idea, the other person has the other idea, and you do have to kind of meet in the middle, and that is always the right decision for the book. But this page here, it reads, Mary has had good eyes and clever hands. Mary had strong tools, and Mary had remarkable patience. And that page was actually two pages in the beginning. And so it said, Mary had good eyes and clever hands. Mary had good eyes. She could do this, that, and could see this and could do that and this and that. And it went on and on and on. And then it said, Mary had strong tools. She had this that her father gave her. She had this and this and this and this. And so I was being very long-winded, and it made sense to me. I loved the way it sounded out loud. And as I was explaining it to Julie, I read just the first parts of each line just so that she could understand why I had done it that way. And she said, Heidi, that's all you need. Because it was important. Those three different things were important. The eyes and hands, the strong tools and the patience, all of those things were important, but I didn't need to qualify it within the text. So it wouldn't have happened the same way if we weren't going live back and forth, if we weren't having a conversation about it.
That's so really interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it, because it was out loud, because picture books are an out loud read. Mm-hmm. Doing it that way with Julie was amazing. And the other story is we did do over more than 12 emails back and forth about one comma. So, I knew I was going to lose because the copy editor was very solid about the fact that I did not need the comma, but I was going to fight for it until I absolutely had to give it up. And I did. But I read that comma. When I read it out loud, I read that comma into it.
Always graceful. gracious, I should say.
That's great.
I said at the end of it, I am using this in a talk for sure on revision. And I have since, at least a couple times. And she said to me in email, I better go back and make sure I didn't say anything silly. She's brilliant. So she never did, but it was a good conversation.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, we're getting to the end of our time. So we have one last question. And Julie, we're going to start with you. When someone reads She Sells Seashells, what do you hope they feel or learn?
Yeah, I hope, you know, that's such a great question. I hope they, because Heidi works so hard to layer this and capture historically what was relevant, but also connect it to today's reader and relevance of today and empowering anyone to follow their passion and regardless of being an outsider, I just hope that one of these many layers resonates in the right way with the right reader, right? So if it's someone who's just curious about fossils or digging or paleontology, I hope that is, you know, rings true to them. And this becomes one more book where they are just enamored of that subject matter and dig into this back matter. But if it's someone who maybe doesn't know anything about paleontology, but is a young reader just thinking about, you know, feeling a little bit like, oh, the boys do this and the girls do that, or kind of feeling like, what am I passionate about? I hope that that, you know, the themes of Mary following her passion and being curious just resonate with the reader. So I just think, like I said, you know, really good books that have multiple layers can really hit people in different ways. And I hope that that happens with this one. And I also hope that those fiction readers who might be reluctant to nonfiction open this up and think like, oh, this narrative voice kind of reads like a fiction book. And so again, those layers and elements that could appeal to various readers in the right moment. I hope that's what comes out of a book like this. So thank you, Heidi, for making it happen so beautifully.
Definitely.
Having kind words from your editor is like magic.
It is so magical.
For sure.
Okay. For sure. So Heidi, what do you hope people feel or learn when they read this book?
I hope they try the tongue twister. It's in the right in the beginning of the book.
Yeah.
I think a lot of my books sort of have, I can think of a couple that I've written that have this sort of heart, this message, which is keep digging, keep doing what you want to do. And one small idea, one small action from one person can change the world. And in this case, it is a child. And she very much changed the world. I mean, she changed the way people were thinking about things right as our worldview was changing. She wasn't making a big deal of it. She saw something that that was her job, and she did it. And now the way science is done is changed because of her. But I'd also love kids to read this, and my dream is that kids read this and say, wow, I can't believe anybody told her she couldn't because she was a girl, or because she was a child, or because she didn't come from a rich background. I know it's a naive hope, but I hope fewer children are given these constraints.
A big thank you to Heidi and Julie for joining us today and giving us a look into the creative process for She Sells Seashells. Check out the show notes to learn more about Heidi and the other fabulous books she has out in the world. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you won't miss an episode, and we would love it if you would leave a review. Thanks for listening, and
happy looking!
Picture Book Look is produced by Kirstie Call and Kim Chafee. Music and sound engineering by James Call.